Jack Chat, presented by the Journal of Athletic Training, the official journal of the National Athletic Trainers Association. I'm Dr. Kara Radzak from the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, and your host for today. Today, I am joined by Drs. Jonna Register-Mihalik, Steve Berglio, and Tamara McLeod, who are part of the author team on the new Concussion Bridge Statement recently published in the Journal of Athletic Training. Dr. Tamara McLeod is the Chair, Director, and Professor of Athletic Training, a professor in the School of Osteopathic Medicine in Arizona, and the John P. Wood Endowed Chair for Sports Medicine at A.T. Still University in Mesa, Arizona. Dr. Steve Berglio is a professor in kinesiology, the director of the University of Michigan Concussion Center in Ann Arbor, and the president-elect of the Concussion and Sport Group. Dr. Jonna Register-Mihalik is an associate professor and founding faculty member in the Matthew Goffeller Center in the Department of Exercise and Sports Science at UNC Chapel Hill. Tamara, Steve, and Jonna, thank you so much for joining me today to talk about this Concussion Bridge Statement. The first question that I want to ask is, what is a bridge statement and why have a bridge statement rather than a new position statement?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think one that had been talked about. The issue is that, you know, the position statement process takes a really long time. So particularly when you have a sort of component of our practice that is so big when we talk about concussion management and the different layers that involves. And so it was decided that we would create a statement that could help bridge the evidence since 2014 to now in 2024, help catch us up with that evidence, but also get us more in line with the international consensus guideline dates and processes. So never again would we be 10 years behind that process. And so hopefully now moving forward, we've bridged the gap a bit to help athletic trainers in their clinical practice and understanding where that evidence fits in line with international consensus. And we are in a place now that if we can move forward sooner than later, developing a full position statement, we'll be in better sync with the international guidance.
So Tamara, what are some of the main areas of the 2014 position statement that were updated?
Yeah, there's probably three that I think we had significant updates in. The first was in the area of assessment, the second in academics and return to learn, and the third within the return to sport strategy and rehabilitation. So specifically with assessment, I think we softened our language about preseason baseline assessments to be more in line with recommendations internationally, really focusing on it being in areas where individuals have the time, the resources, and the availability to do them appropriately if they're using them rather than just checking a box. A bad baseline is not helpful from a clinical practice standpoint. And so I think that was our philosophy there. In addition, we added elements in the assessment about visual and vestibular assessments, because those are some of the assessments that are showing very good evidence with respect to diagnostic capabilities with what we have. And lastly, we really looked at the assessment piece from a biopsychosocial standpoint, which is important, really focusing on the whole person and not just impairments that they might have. With return to learn, we've learned a lot since 2014. It's probably one of the areas with a lot of growth. And so we added some additional recommendations to really help athletic trainers foster those collaborations with those in the school setting, as well as community healthcare providers. And then lastly, with the return to sport, we removed the language that has been sitting there for a long time about individuals needing to be asymptomatic to actually exercise. And the return to sport strategy is now in line with the international guidelines and really following that model that includes treatment as part of that strategy that can be done early. And I think Jonna can speak to that a little bit more.
Yeah, that was definitely something that was really exciting to see moving in. So you want to expand upon that, Jonna?
Yeah, I can talk a little more about it. I agree that it is really exciting. I think it's a place, you know, we as athletic trainers have been waiting a long time to think about how we can continue to help in that process. And I know it was perplexing as an athletic trainer, you know, that we had a statement from 2014 that still said no activity in the first stage, and then to have international guidance kind of moving faster than that. So now we're at a place where we've been able to bridge that, you know, and really, as Tamara said, you know, really thinking about this idea of the first three stages of that return to sport paradigm are now therapeutic. Someone can have symptoms, you're moving them through that as a part of therapy and rehab. And then once they become asymptomatic, then you really start, you know, that process of returning them back into their team environment and their sport, kind of the way we would think about those stages in the prior time. But those first three stages are really where that big difference is and really allow us to really take a rehabilitation-based approach from day one after someone has a concussion.
Steve, what are some other ways that these updates might empower athletic trainers?
Yeah, we spent a considerable amount of time discussing about the specific language we wanted to use in the document that would do exactly what you're asking. And a lot of it is trying to educate, obviously our athletic trainers know what we can do, but trying to educate the general population on the expertise that we bring to concussion management, particularly as licensed healthcare providers. So I think two things sort of come to mind that we added to the document, a little bit different from 2014. I think the first is there's very clear language in there that empowers athletic trainers to make decisions about the evaluation and management of concussions without the influence of non-medical staff. And so really giving them a document to lean on that they can use broadly within whatever their setting happens to be, that they, along with their supervising physician, should really be making the medical decisions. The other thing that we added in that I'm very happy that we were able to do and is different from 2014 is allowing the athletic trainer to select what assessments they want to use at each point along the identification and management timeline. And the example that I always bring up is if you're on the sideline and somebody has a loss of consciousness on the field, you don't need to do anything. You already know what the injury is. And there's no reason to take that person through a full symptom checklist on the sideline and a balance assessment and a SAC neurocognitive screening. You want to do that later on so you understand where they are in the recovery process and you want to be able to track that. But the 2014 document would indicate you had to do all those things on the sideline, and that has been removed. And it's really at the discretion of the athletic trainer to pick and choose the tests that they want to administer and then how to interpret those.
Yeah, you've given a lot more opportunity to create the needs specific. And you've kind of mentioned this whole biopsychosocial aspect, really looking at patient-specific needs. Can you guys touch on that and how this new biopsychosocial approach came into play?
I think, you know, part of it is how our thinking around the injury has evolved over the last 10 years. And I would say up to the 2014 position statement, we were solely focused on the biology of the injury, right? So this kind of stretching of the neurons and the ion shift, how symptoms and signs and symptoms present because of that. And I think what we've realized through a lot of work that people on this call and other athletic trainers in this space, and then obviously other clinician scientists from around the world, is that the psychology that the athlete brings to the injury, meaning if they have premorbid depression or anxiety or other factors that may influence risk or recovery, along with the sociology, right? Who are the people around the athlete and how does that influence their injury risk, their injury reporting, their injury recovery? And asking the athletic trainers to think about those things as they are doing baseline testing, as they are making recommendations about post-injury care, and then the actual care that they are providing to the athletes, because they all play important roles independent of each other and kind of interspersed with each other throughout the entire process.
Tamara, what are some other areas that are new in this bridge statement?
Yeah, along with kind of the biopsychosocial lens for assessment and treatment, probably the three other areas are the inclusion of mental health as a key component for assessment, understanding the social determinants of health and contextual factors that could influence an individual's recovery. And then I believe we might be one of the first consensus statements or statements that really highlights the need to understand return to driving and how we counsel patients about that after the fact. And a lot of that research is led by athletic trainers, which is very exciting to be able to include some of those recommendations in the statement.
So, Jonna, how did you guys go about identifying kind of like the methodology behind creating these new topics? Give us some insight into that.
Yeah, that's a great question, because this is not a full position statement. And I'm sure that some of you are aware, but there's a new process for position statements where there's larger systematic reviews being conducted with a really outstanding job done by the pronouncements committee to move that forward. And we didn't really have the time to do that, to be able to create this bridge to help us get back in sync. And so, you know, we do make in the statement that this is not a full position statement and it was not a systematic review process. So I do want to be clear there. What we did were each of the authors on the team did high level literature reviews and each of the key areas that were in the previous position statement to kind of understand where the literature was in those spaces, and then in the spaces where we knew evidence was exploding, and then put together the list of ideas and recommendations that were then vetted by the authorship team, and then use that SORT taxonomy as recommended and put forth by the pronouncements committee to help us understand not only the availability or the amount of evidence that might be in a space, but also the consistency of the evidence. So for instance, with exercise, right, we're just seeing this growing body of evidence that early exercise in clinical trials at a really high level of evidence is really effective, you know, in the recovery process. And so that is, you know, that A classification type work, whereas we still have many other things in the space of concussion. So anyone wanting to do research, there's lots of room for growth and space that are in those sort B and sort C classifications, right, where you either just don't have enough or it's not consistent in those spaces.
Yeah, that was one of the things that stood out to me was kind of like the swing in the recommendation and it going to an A sort. Like you rarely ever get to see A sort classifications. So that's really exciting.
Just really quickly, I think it's also hard in sports medicine to do RCTs in some spaces, right? Just because of the type of work that we do, it's not drug-based, you know, and you see, you know, it's not as easy to do that. Exercise and some of the rehab provided an opportunity to be able to do that work. Those types of interventions lend themselves to that level of study. You know, so I think that's why you saw that. I do think it's important as athletic trainers, though, that we know that although that's the highest level of evidence, sometimes it's not the most pragmatic. And so, you know, making sure we understand that full range of research. But I think that's why that jumps so quickly, because those types of interventions lend themselves to the studies that get you there faster.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to do randomized control studies on a lot of the sports medicine topics. Perfect. So as clinicians are reevaluating their concussion policies and procedures, and we know that a lot of this gets done over the summer, right? Here we are in April going into the time when people are going to start looking at this. What should they be looking at? What are some areas of special consideration that they need to kind of refine?
Yeah, I can take a stab at this one. I mean, I think, you know, every athletic trainer should be reviewing their policies and procedures every year to make sure that everything's up to date. And, you know, sometimes those are incremental changes. And then I think in the case of this bridge statement, there's going to be more than just incremental changes. But my guess is that many of the new recommendations are probably already being done by the vast majority of practicing athletic trainers. And, you know, a consensus statement, a position statement, a bridge statement like this one is really just a summary of a lot of work that's been done over the last decade. And sort of we're putting it all together and then making a recommendation. But I think a lot of people will read this and go, oh, I'm already doing that. So to the listeners, I want to, you know, just give some solace that you're probably already in a good spot. But I think what some easy things that could be done, and I would definitely recommend, is review your return to learn policy and protocol. Make sure that's up to date. The return to play protocols, make sure those are up to date. I think Tamara mentioned the driving recommendations. Those can be added to discussion points with our patients. And then really thinking about how you're going to incorporate a mental health evaluation using biopsychosocial context in your evaluation and treatment of your patients. All those can easily be added into your protocols. And then depending on, you know, your resources, you might be having a conversation with your administration about whether you're going to do baseline testing in August, September, or, you know, maybe you're going to expand it. You have great resources. Maybe you need to contract it because you don't have the resources that you think you need. So there's obviously that's all going to be site dependent, but I think a lot of this stuff will come very naturally to the practicing athletic trainer.
Let's dig into that a little bit more, because I was reading this. That was the first thing that popped into my mind, is so many schools have this almost mandate that everybody has to have their baseline testing? And so how does an athletic trainer that might be at one of those schools go and navigate this?
I think some of it is going to be the resources, and it may be you need to go ask for additional resources if you feel like you're not practicing up to kind of what you feel you can administer. If I just had a few more dollars and bought this piece of equipment or this computer program, it'd be easy to do. I just need the money to do it. Others may be in a situation where I'm one athletic trainer for 500 student athletes, and no matter how much money you give me, I'm not going to be able to do this effectively. And maybe you need to have a conversation with your administration and dial that back a little bit. The one thing I would say is whether you are adding or subtracting or just keeping the same, making sure that you're in compliance with your state laws, your sport federation laws or policies, and then any other regulations that you might fall under. This is just a recommendation document. It is not kind of law or policies that would supersede it. So just making sure that you're in compliance with those as well.
And I would just add, I think the other piece comes to clinical reasoning and decision-making. If you're going to administer an assessment to a patient, you should know beforehand, what are you going to do with the information you get from that assessment? And if all you're using a preseason baseline for is to check a box at some point, whether they return to baseline, that may not be great use of your time and resources. If you're going to be using the results of the assessment to drive your treatment planning, since we're really focused on concussion is an injury we can treat, that's a different story. And so I think part of it and the way that I often teach it is before you put your hands on a patient or have them do anything, you should know what you're going to do with the results of whatever you get back and how that's going to drive your care. And so I think, you know, we need to think a little bit outside of the mechanical check the box that this is done and more into what will I do with the information from this particular assessment at this point in time. And if I'm not going to be doing anything, I'd second, you know, have a question yourself again as to whether or not you really need to have the patient do that at that point in time.
So as we kind of wrap this up, what are some of the areas that either one, you were really excited to actually be able to include in a statement like this, or two, an area that is emerging that you could imagine seeing in the next iteration or the next position statement?
I'd say for me, the most exciting part was certainly, you know, really being able to provide some guidance in line with the international consensus about early exercise and targeted mm-hmm. rehab to really give people the space and the guidance to be able to do that. I think it does take a long time to get those things to uptake in clinical settings. So we have some work to do to provide each other with support and resources and evidence to do that well. And I think we have a responsibility to do that. But I was really excited to be able to put those parameters in with the evidence that supports it to help us move forward in that space, and then to help keeping the research forward, because there are still other things that I think we're going to get even more salient about in terms of, you know, intensity, timing, workload, and how that carries through the return to sport and then return to life context as well.
And seeing weight training in there, not just aerobic.
Yeah. Yes. And I think that is a space where we'll see explosion as well, because there's, you know, we're still moving towards more evidence in that space. So really exciting.
Tamara?
For me, the most exciting piece to include was the mental health. I've been studying quality of life for a while, and I think understanding that there is a psychological component to the injury, and perhaps more importantly to recovery, that social support can be critical to helping or hindering a patient recover, depending on the culture of their team and their environment. So having the mental health in there for me, what was critical. And I'd like to see more work done in that particular space moving forward with perhaps, some even stronger recommendations for mental health considerations.
Steve.
I was super proud that the writing group kind of rallied around the empowerment language for the athletic mm-hmm. trainers, not only around the medical decision making, but them making the choices along the way. And just glad that that's in there. And I think it'll help a lot of us when we're out in the field doing the work that we do. I think looking forward, not in the document, but I think it'll happen in the next 10-ish years is where biomarkers start to play a role in injury diagnostics and recovery. And so the FDA just approved a test a couple days ago. We're a long way from it being standard of care, but it's coming. And I think once we have a really good understanding from a research perspective of what it can and can't do, I think it's going to just totally change the way we are managing this injury, diagnosing and managing this injury. And I think it's just going to be great for our patients.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you guys all so much for joining and putting this information out there. Position statements and even a bridge statement is a huge undertaking, and this one was sorely needed. So thank you guys all three, and also the whole entire author group, because this is definitely a joint effort anytime these things go out. So Dr. Broglio, Dr. McLeod, Dr. Register Mihalik, thank you again so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.